This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Cast Haven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Doom Travelers Weekly, where we play Destiny and talk about magic. Topics this week are going to include the story of Alesha, who smiles at death. Some first impressions of Fate Reforged Limited. A bit of discussion about how much Matt hates magic finance. And we'll wrap up with a preview of Pro Tour Fate Reforged, which comes next week in Washington, D.C. Joined by a panel of Guardians this week who are going to help rock some Clash matches, a little change from normal since Clash is the bounty this week instead of Control. We'll be jumping into Clash. And our opening question this week is going to be, what is one thing you would love to see happen at next week's Pro Tour? So Dave McCoy, Gamertag McNasty.
McNasty, yeah. Just cracks me up every time.
If I could have one thing in the past 2 months that I could do over, it would be a gamertag. But
that's not the question. The question is, one thing you want to see at Pro Tour Fate Reforged.
Yeah, since I'm first, I get the easy answer, which is I, at a minimum, want to see our friends day two. And if I'm asking for anything, I would like one of them to top eight. Preferably all of them, but definitely one of them.
That would be very exciting.
I think they all have a very good shot of day two-ing. That's at a minimum what I want to see out of the Pro Tour.
So for those of you who don't know, of course, Matt and Dave are both members of our local team Draft League, which is sending four members to the Pro Tour. Abe Lusk, Hugh Kramer, Brendan McNamara, and Richard Tan will all be representing Team Draft League at next week's Pro Tour.
My article is almost exclusively about Richard Tan and how to draft with him this week. So
nice.
Stay tuned.
So let's go next to Matt the Obliterator Jones. Matt, if you could see any one thing happen at the Pro Tour next week, what would you like to see?
I would like all four of our friends to get really close to making day two, but not quite get there, so they still have something to hunger for. And I would like any of my professional magic friends who have already top eighted several times to either win or top eight again.
And anyone in particular? is there any one of them? I want you to have to pick one of your friends who is a pro player.
Shit.
To win, if you could pick any one of them. I know you're friends with a bunch of them, but if you could pick any one of them to win, because I want the rest of them to feel bad.
I would like Go Dennis to win.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I just think his basketball game has been a little weak lately.
He doesn't quite
look like he knows what he's doing. I think he needs to build up some more confidence and get a little bit of smarminess back.
So you think winning the Pro Tour would really help him pick up his basketball game?
I would like Dennis to win the Pro Tour so that he plays more defense better in basketball.
I can't think of a better reason to win a Pro Tour. our third panel member this week is Matt Punkpitz Culpitz, who is not technically a Magic player, but we're all Magic players at heart. Matt, if you could see one thing happen at the Pro Tour, which you're not going to be watching next week, what would it be?
I'd like to see everybody get along very well, you know. Somebody to win, I hope. You know, it's going to be a lot of losing, but I hope somebody wins.
You hope somebody wins the whole tournament, or somebody wins a single match? Because I'm assuming...
As long as somebody wins one match...
Got it.
That would make my... That would be...
Millennium. Yeah. Oh, shit, I died.
That's my official stone point.
We need a pro tour of Destiny so that culpits can participate.
That'd be so great.
Of course...
That's just an extra gun, you know? But,
yeah. Of course, I'm your host, Rich Stein, and since I am a troll at heart, the one thing I would love to see at Pro Tour Fate Reforged is a dredge deck go undefeated in the modern competition, rocking Golgari Grave Troll.
Oh my god.
There's nothing I want more than to just troll everyone in the community by Golgari Grave Troll putting up. It doesn't even, like the player doesn't even have to make top 8. I really hope it's Wrath Levy with some crazy Life from the Loam build or something, but it could be anyone. I'm not picky with who shows up with a crazy...
Wow, this sounds very personal.
It is very personal. I'm a big fan of Golgari Grave Troll.
Nice.
So anyways, let me get us into orbit here. And we'll head into Clash. I haven't played Clash in a very long time. It seems generally inferior to Control. Just because... And I don't even know why I feel that way. It's still a 6v6 team match, so... I don't know why I've always felt that Control is just more fun of a team game. Do you guys have any opinions on Control versus Clash?
I mean, in my experience, what Control does is it takes maps and condenses them into those three sections that you have to defend. So it creates a lot more interaction between the players.
Yes.
But at the same time, it also allows you to get points even though you're not killing people. So
right.
It lets you contribute to your team's success. I, on the other hand, like Clash more, I think, because I just like sniping people. And sniping is not a very effective strategy in Control, but it is a very effective strategy in Clash.
Oh, I fucking hate sniping. Is there going to be a lot of sniping in this?
probably not.
It's also really fun because it's more random on where you'll run into somebody who's shooting at you.
Right. Right. No, it's a good point. So I guess Clash gives you a little more opportunity to have some freedom on the map, whereas Control is really focused because of the control points. So anyways, so Matt, Dave, you guys both have now had an opportunity to draft Fate Reforged. I think
4 times.
Wow. 4 times for you or total for both of you?
I'd like to say that I don't follow Dave around or have any cameras trained on him at any given moment. I'd like to say that, so I'm just going to say that.
Okay.
I don't. I don't know how many times Dave has drafted. I've drafted it 4 times.
4 times. And Dave?
Yes.
I've drafted it 3 times now.
3 times. So first impressions. So have you done 3 drafts? What's your win-loss record?
My first one was at the Hipsters Holiday Party, and I went 1-1. Didn't play a third match because Cass Daven had to show us stuff on the computer, and then that took forever, and they started speaking robot speak, so I never got to match 3. And then... second match was Team Draft League yesterday, in which I went 1-2 with a pile of shit deck because I sat next to Pro Tour Richard Tan, who really has no idea what he's doing in a draft, and then somehow pulls this crazy-ass deck out, and his signals are mental, and I just don't get it. I feel like I'm a little hesitant to say that he's schizophrenic, because I don't know, because people are actually schizophrenic, and maybe that's offensive, but there are definitely more than one person in his mind making decisions for him during pack 1 of the draft. So I went 1-2. And then today, Kadar and I drafted together, timed out in 2 matches online.
Yeah.
And then I didn't even play the third one with him. I watched him play while I painted. And then, so we 0-3'd that. And then I just sort of rage drafted myself when Kadar took off to go eat barbecue in Red Hook. And I PO'd the shit out of it with a really sick Black-White Warriors deck featuring almost no cards from the new set.
I was gonna ask when you said that, like, what did you take from the first pack that went in your Black White Warriors deck?
The 5 mana removal spell.
Right.
That was pack one.
Actually, got a guy behind you.
Pack one, pick two was the second. It was the exact same card, and then I can't think of any. Oh, I had two emissaries that were late picks. The ones that manifest a guy. But otherwise, it was just, I didn't have any of the lords. I passed those, and there ended up being two other warriors decks in my pod. I beat both of them. One was green black, one was red black white. I had all the good black cards. I just punched my own guy, and all the good white cards. And so they were trying to make it work with, like, Jesus, I can't charge anymore. What the hell is happening?
Did you mess with your configuration?
Yeah, I gotta fix my shit. I'm like running up to people and just tapping them on the shoulder lightly, and then they just beat the fuck out of me. That's crazy. So it was like very, very standard, nothing too exciting from the other. I had the one dash black creature that does a point of damage, but it was never good, and I sided it out a couple of times. Anyways, your turn.
I guess actually, now that you've reminded me about Casthaven, I guess I have drafted 4 times, so I've tied you up, Jones. But my experience has been very 50-50 in terms of my win-loss record. I've drafted I drafted blue, I think, every single time. I don't know why that is. I've just fallen into blue. But I'm honestly having trouble discerning the differences between Fate Reforged and Gods of Tarkir. Maybe it's because the changes are subtle, because you only get one pack of Fate Reforged, but I'm having a rough time exactly figuring out how the format has changed. One of the most obvious is Black-White Warriors just isn't as good anymore, because you don't get 3 packs of the Wards and 3 packs of Horde Chiefs and that kind of stuff.
Right.
But other than that, it seems slightly harder to build multicolor decks because Manifest just doesn't make up for Morph. It fills a very different role. Morph fixes your mana because it doesn't cost colored mana until you turn it face up. There are a lot fewer dual lands. Mathematically, it's actually the difference is lower than it feels, but the absence of the tri-lands in that Fate Reforged pack has a huge impact.
So the non-basic land in the Fate Reforged pack, that can only be
a dual land,
or it can be a fetch land. It can't
and
be
actually,
one.
Surprisingly, there are foil basics in the Fate Reforged packs too, which I did not know was possible. We pulled a foil swamp, and I think it has Gods of Tarkir art on it, but it has the Fate Reforged set symbol.
I think the foil sheet always contains basics, so...
That makes sense. Anyway,
when I did the, what is it called, that blurring of thing, I've done all the blurrings, but I haven't done the big one, where I do all of them, but it, when you download all the art for the lands, it includes one of each basic, with a Khan's logo, instead of, you know what I mean? So that explains
this one had a Fate Reforged. I mean, this one had a Fate Reforged logo.
Oh, I'm sorry, I meant to say Fate Reforged.
Okay.
Right on. So I guess the big question is, so Black-White Warriors isn't as good anymore. Is it still...
There still are some good replacement cards. Like, I think that Emissary is super, super good.
But is it no longer a
Zombie Warrior?
Is it no longer a 3-color draft format? Is it now a more traditional draft format of sorts?
It still feels 3 colors. Maybe that's because of inertia, and we're so used to drafting 3 colors that it's hard to get away from it. But my mid bases have been terrible most of the time. Because the fixing feels more scarce, you have one pack less of morphs to make up for the lack of fixing. It feels like I'm going to have to adjust the colors that I draft and maybe push closer to two colors here on out, because it just feels harder to build a three-color deck.
Do you think it's do you think the value of fixing now in the first two packs is much higher then?
Oh, yeah, man. I think also people are very much panic picking. Like Sean last night picked every goddamn dual land in the first pack. It was kind of impressive how many dual lands. So I feel like people are maybe panic picking dual lands just because they're worried about whatever's going to happen to what colors they're going to have to go into. Richard Tan had like 37 dual lands last night. And no powerful cards, but he could cast all of them.
So how did that translate to who won and who lost? Did it pay off? Was drafting dual lands the right thing to do?
Sean 0-3, and he had a ton of dual lands. Richard 1-2, and he had a bunch of dual lands. Richard's drafting like fucked up my drafting, and then led me to basically hook Tony up with a really sweet deck. So I mean, I honestly like. I really feel like I'm just shitting on Richard, but I have no idea what to do when I'm drafting next to Chase. You know what I mean? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, five-color drafters are hard to deal with. Especially five-color drafters that start in a direction and then completely switch courses to become five-color drafters.
Yeah, I mean, Dan was in a almost mono-blue deck with some red, from what I remember, and his deck was amazing. And it was very consistent, and I think he had like a Swift Water Cliffs or whatever the red blue duel's called, and like maybe that's it. His deck was just perfect and almost only two colors.
Yeah, that feels like
two colors
it's the right
is
way
the way to go.
Yeah, I mean the games that I've lost, I think I've lost more than half to mana. Either not having a color or and that's far more likely than just missing a land drop, like just missing a color, and that's very frustrating. Because you end up, it's funny, you end up with more colored spells in your deck, because, I'm just going to keep saying this over and over, you get no morphs in Fate Reforged. So those count, you know, as colorless, because you get to cast them for the colorless mana.
Right.
And so you end up with more colored cards, and you end up with fewer ways to fix your mana. With the dual land, so I just lost to mana issues far more than I have in just triple cons.
So do you think it's a tougher format to build the mana bases in, or do you think it's just that you're so used to the mana bases from cons that you're not drafting correct, like you're just not valuing the lands correctly anymore?
I think I'm way too greedy. And like expecting these lands to show up, and then they're already taken by other people, or they're not as available, or whatever. And I just don't. I think two colors is the way to go, and knocking it off with the three colors is a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the third color. Like I, unfortunately, we still have two packs that push you into three colors of cards right here. So I feel like the proper response to Fate Reforged might be to make that third color only on gold cards and morphs. Because where I've run into trouble is I've just had straight up like third color cards in my deck, and I was never able to cast them. So
right.
If they're a morph, that's fine. They're always going to be a 2/2, and that works out pretty well.
Ammo available.
And if it's a gold card, like you're splashing for the power of the gold card, which is also acceptable. I just have yet to get used to the fact that I can't build solid two-color decks anymore. It's going to be two colors with splash. A reliable splash, hopefully, but just a kind of little splash.
I had Ankle Shanker and Ride Down in my deck as potentials today in the Black-White Warriors deck I built, and I didn't end up playing either of them because I felt like it was just going to F up my mana too much and things would be way too inconsistent. And at no point was I like, man, I really wish I had played that, you know, like, really wish I'd played Ankle Shaker. It never would have done anything better than what my other cards were doing, and the inconsistency would have been so bad.
Yep.
And those That's ride it. Down an ankle shanker were more powerful than any cards in my deck by a lot.
So it's interesting how the two colors plus splashing a third seems to play right into what Fate Reforged is kind of all about, yeah? Because the clans in Fate Reforged are very much focused in two colors and kind of splashing a third. And those two colors really match the Dragon Brood colors. So it's interesting how the one pack change really has an impact on the format.
Dramatic.
Yeah, is that what the Dragon Broods are, is two colors?
Yeah, so the Dragon Broods are all two colors, and the clans have now changed to two colors, really. So, for example, the Jeskai, who were red, white, and blue in Khanza Tarkir, are really now just blue and white, with a few cards in Fate Reforged that are red. So if you want to draft a Jeskai deck, you might want to just focus on blue and white Jeskai cards out of the cons packs, and then only splash red, like Dave said, on your morph cards and gold cards. Don't pick up the random red, because there's just no red Jeskai in that third pack to flesh out your deck. I don't know if that's a good idea, but I wonder if that's kind of what they were going for.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a transition set. Of course, we don't know where we're going to end up. If it's true, like you say, the clans have become more two-color than three-color, perhaps we end up with a two-color set again, like a little Ravnica of Tarkir in Dragons of Tarkir, or maybe they shift from the wedges to the shards. Who knows?
I think we're gonna see it. Dragons of Tarkir be a two color set. The broods are two colors. Fate Reforged is two colors. It's almost as if the Khanza of Tarkir version of the clans was a future where the clans all kind of spread out and into a third color. So you could see in Fate Reforged that they're all kind of toying with this third color of mana as a way to kind of become more powerful. And in Khanza of Tarkir, they do that because they kind of stray away from their dragon brood counterparts. But if the dragons stick around or come back, they might be more adhere more to the two colors, and I think it's unlike Ravnica. Ravnica is really a world where we get to explore what it means to be a two color combination. What I think is going to happen with Dragons of Tarkir, and I think the kind of design they're going with, is what does it mean for the two color combinations to fight themselves? Right? What is a blue-white?
Yeah.
What is a blue-white deck, or what does blue and white do against blue and white? Because that's kind of what they're setting up. Because the Dragon Broods are the same colors as the clans they fight.
Work together, and you might survive.
So it'll be interesting to. I think that's my guess of how it's going to play out. So from a draft perspective, I think you're going to be looking at a two-color format, which will hopefully be a little nicer on your mana base at least, and that's probably why there's no tri-lands in the Fate Reforged packs.
Makes a lot of sense, Rich.
Thanks.
Sense. I was actually watching the Pro Tour before I got here, while I was painting tonight, and there was the feature match they had. Oh, sorry, GP San Jose. Yeah.
Right.
And there was a blue-black deck, which was mostly blue, playing a blue-green deck, which was mostly blue. And they were just playing the exact same cards.
Right.
And I was like, this is how I need to draft. This, when I kept saying this, I was like, I know that they're pulling from a large sealed pool to make these decks, but I think you could very easily draft decks like that and be pretty successful. The end.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think, you know, obviously, if you can draft a solid three-color deck, by all means, do it. But instead of just trying to overvalue the tri-lands and stuff like that, I think you just have to find a two-color combination and go with it.
What did you just do?
I killed myself. Sorry, guys.
Is that you laying on the ground there?
Oh.
Oh, that's sad. That's sad.
I was very impressed with how well we did the first round, so don't screw this up.
I like how you're doing all the talking and you had the highest score.
That's always impressive.
Thanks.
It's really impressive. How
I'm not doing as well this time. I don't really do most of the work. My heavy machine gun does the majority of the heavy lifting. I'm not making that up, guys. I'm telling you. You got to get a heavy machine gun that has a 75 shot clip.
Yeah. Yeah, I made that upgrade recently. I went from a high impact slow rate of fire machine gun to a high impact low impact high rate of fire, and it's made a big difference. You can kill so much faster.
I use shotguns.
It's a valid strategy as well.
And I shoulder charge people, as you just saw.
I should switch to a shotgun for this map.
But in terms of like cards that I did not expect to be so great, but I've been very impressed by.
Yeah.
Of course, now I'm completely blanking on the name. But it's 4 and a blue, draw 3, discard 1 at instant speed.
I think that card's very good.
I cast it like 10 times today. I feel like it's like Treasure Cruise. I see it like I saw Treasure Cruise at the beginning of Con, which is, this costs too much to just to draw cards. I'm just not a card drawer in general.
But
then Treasure Cruise was so broken and so good, and I think honestly what makes this card so much better than what I initially thought was the fact that it's instant speed. You can hold mana up to unmorph, and instead of unmorphing, just draw cards if you unmorph. It just impressed me and got me out of so many games in which I was losing, and that's the biggest in
Dave, I rarely agree with you, and I 100% have had the exact same experience with that card. It's awesome.
It's a great card.
Card drawing, especially at instant speed, is so powerful. And I mean, we touched a little bit on this last week, but from a developmental perspective, Wizards seems to be very poor at properly costing draw spells. So anytime you have an opportunity to...
this is no opportunity. I'm afraid you only get to draw 3, and you have to discard one of them. So.
Come on, Dave.
Wow.
And it shouldn't be have to discard. It should
I kind of walked
get
into
to
that one.
Because
discard,
you,
yeah.
you can delve and shit, and it's really nice.
Right.
I had a crazy turn today where I was attacking with like 9 guys with a rush of battle, and we could tell the guys, like, why are you attacking with all these guys? They're just going to die. It's because I didn't have enough mana to cast my Necropolis Fiend. So he ends up taking only, like, I don't know, 8 damage or something. He was at a pretty high total. But, like, a bunch of my guys died, which then allowed me to cast Necropolis Fiend with the 2 black mana that I had up, and it was freaking awesome.
Yeah. And aside from that card, I think all of the sieges, except for the green one, all of the sieges have been very impressive. I watched the white one, and I've watched the blue one so far, and I even had to convince my teammate Bert Phillips to run his foil blue siege. And
I think the blue one's the best one.
Yeah, and it's just won him half the games that he won, and then Monique drafted it in the second draft we had, and she was drawing that combined with the Jeskai Elder that I couldn't block because it had flying. Where she was drawing 3 cards a turn, given she had to discard 2 of them. But
yikes.
Like, Ancestral and then discarding 2 is still, yeah, it's still amazing.
You have access to so much more of your library when you're doing that. It's crazy.
But I didn't expect the sieges to be that good either. That's a rare though. Those are rares, so it's
right.
You know, you're gonna see them a lot less, whereas the blue spells are common. Something that you're going to see very often.
Right. Have you had an opportunity to draft Treasure Cruise and just been like, aww?
You know, I have passed on treasure freezes because I already had two of the card that I'm still blanking on the name for. Up to 5 mana, draw 3, discard 1.
Oh, okay.
Just because it fits so much better with Morph. Because treasure freeze, like, it's good on turn 5 because you're probably only going to cast it for 4 mana. But you're doing it on your main phase. And
right.
And you're basically passing a turn to draw your cards.
Whereas right.
With the instant speed draw, you're not giving up anything, and you get to choose the best of both worlds. You have to
even though you're always paying full value, full cost, because it's instant speed.
5 minutes remaining.
It's just much more flexible.
Yep.
Nice. Well, that's good to know. so
draft,
other
draft like 5 of them. Oh, draft 5 of them. I think that's probably the minimum I would play.
Yeah, 6 to 5.
6 to 5.
That's backwards. Sorry. Oh my God, Robert Culpitz has joined.
Robert Culpitz has joined.
Should probably share his voice
party
so that we can hear him.
Yeah, let's make sure he shares his voice. What's our next topic? Let's move on from drafting.
Yeah. So I guess you guys. I wanted to touch a little bit on a topic that I know is very near and dear to Matt's heart, and that's money.
I'm gonna get mad.
Yeah. So, one of the interesting things that I noticed happened this weekend was the value of
Tisigur.
No, Little Tisigur is one, but Golgari Grave Troll had a up and down week. But what's really grinding my gears, and I mean, we might just end up having a session where we just complain about it. A few online retailers, and this happens anytime there's a banned and restricted update. A few online retailers, of course, canceled a ton of orders on people who got in.
Oh,
and
shut up! That's so fucked up.
Right. So, of course, Golgari Grave Troll is worth like $2 before the bannings were unbanning was announced. But of course, it went up. So immediately, a bunch of people bought them, and orders get canceled. And Tossiger is kind of a similar story. Anytime cards go up in value, and it's tough because there's certainly value in the cards. But at the same time, it's a real shitty thing that happens anytime banned.
Unethical.
It certainly is unethical.
Wait, should we leave matchmaking so that Robert
oh, yeah.
can join us?
Absolutely.
Oh, cool.
We're clashing.
Nice. My guy's on his way to the tower. I'm just going to pick up a bounty real quick.
Sounds good.
If you don't mind.
Then join us.
So we're gonna just hover in orbit and talk about So banned and restricted, and this happens every time, almost every time there's a banned and restricted update, it seems. Tossiger is a little bit of a different story because he's just new, and he's a mythic, right? Is he a mythic, or is he just a rare?
No, he's just a rare.
Yeah. So, I mean, this happens all the time. So instead of just complaining about it, I want to... Is it something you guys ever try to profit off of or speculate about? And is it something you think that there's a way to improve upon so it's not such of a feel-bad moment for people? And don't hold back, Matt. Tell us how you really feel.
I mean, it's capitalism. What are you going to do? I mean, capitalism is fucked. It's just, like, the shittiest thing. So, I mean, if you have a game...
But capitalism, right? The thing about capitalism would be it's a free market, yeah? So the moment that Wizards announces that Golgari Grave Troll is being unbanned, right? If I'm a savvy purchaser in a capitalist market and I see someone is still selling that at under market value and I buy it, then good for me. And if I'm a seller, then it's my responsibility to make sure I understand how the market works and price my products accordingly. And if I underprice a product and it gets bought from me, then that's my fault. But what we have is a culture where the sellers are just canceling, are basically saying, "Nah, I'm just lazy. I'm gonna just cancel all these orders, not send any cards, and then I'm just gonna change my price accordingly, and then sell cards again."
And so, what do you do when that happens? You like write a shitty Yelp review for them, or you know, you?
Yeah, more or less. That's pretty much what the only recourse we have today. So, do you think it's something that Wizards should bear some of the responsibility for, or is it something that we only should rely on, like Yelp and Reddit?
I don't think Wizards is responsible for any of that. What I think Wizards should really do is print. Oh, we can go to Clash now. Robert's joined us. What I think Wizards should really do is just print like unlimited amounts of these cards and have their values be fucking nothing, and then everybody can play with whatever the hell they want to play. There's no weird hierarchy or class issues. There's no economic shit. It's just packs are $4. You know, you can get any of these cards really easily. But they'll never do that because you don't make money doing that.
Yeah. Well, that also reduces the ability of the secondary market providers like Luis, who sells cards at his store, to actually continually make money, though. Like, Luis supports, I don't know the exact numbers, but probably a good percentage of his sale, of his, not sales, but income, is based on card sales. And if the cards aren't worth anything, then that reduces any card seller's ability to maintain a storefront and thus maintain an area where people can play Magic on a consistent basis. But, I mean, aside from the prices themselves, like, there are a couple different things going on with canceled orders. One is retailers just not paying attention to the banned and restricted list and that kind of stuff. And we all know when the banned and restricted list is getting released. I'm not sure why these sellers aren't paying attention to that, because they're selling Magic cards. They clearly know at least something about what's going on in Magic. But another issue is a technological issue. Like, I'm a web developer, and the part of how the web works and why the web is so fast is caching, which is saving old data and presenting it to the visitor on a website. And this happens to a lesser extent in e-commerce sites. And you rarely have issues where you oversell, because people don't buy things all at once. They buy it like over the course of a day. But with rushes like this, where at 11 a.m. Eastern, people, thousands and thousands of people are trying to buy the same thing from a website, and that website is serving you old data and is operating based on that old data. It may only be 5 seconds old or 10 seconds old, but what that means is it's not an exact representation of the stock that vendor has. And so overselling is a distinct possibility. It's a real thing. And so when an order's canceled, it's not like if they're telling you, oh, it's oversold, like this isn't our fault. They may be lying, but there's a technological excuse, and like this actually happens is what I'm trying to say. Like it's a problem of the banned and restricted list coming out at a certain time, which then causes a bunch of purchases at once, and that's something that online technology just can't deal with very well.
So it's a combination of a lot of factors, some of which are within the retailer's control and some of which are most certainly not.
Not just greed, though I'm sure a good part of it is.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a mix of things. Another thing that's come up a lot recently, which is a direct or indirect result of this, the way we value the cards, is counterfeiting. So there's been another recent wave of counterfeits to come out of China. These ones are no better than any others that have come out. They fail a variety of counterfeiting tests, but nonetheless, there's certainly a culture of counterfeits. Have you guys ever come across counterfeit cards?
I've only had Mike Simpson had a phony Ancestral, I think. And then he was in the middle of a vintage tournament and needed to buy another one right there. And the guy he was playing said something like, this is phony. And Mike said, no, I bought this from blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, it's not real. So then he had to replace it with a basic island that match and then go to a crate and buy one. Yeah, that's a bummer. pretty big bummer.
Yeah, it's definitely not a feel good. They're usually
That's all I've experienced.
I've seen a handful of them, mostly that Luis had the unfortunate circumstance to acquire. The most expensive one I think Luis ever had was a fake Abyss that he had purchased. I think he had purchased it literally just to find out if it was fake, because the owner refused to run any tests on it. He didn't want to bend test it. He didn't want to do anything. So I think Luis bought it just to prove it was fake.
I actually bend tested all my power that I have.
Bend tested your Lotus?
I bend tested my Lotus. I bend tested both of my Mosses when I got them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. It's certainly becoming much more concerning these days. You know, there's a few videos online from the Chinese manufacturers who make these cards, and they look pretty good. They look like brand new cards. And I mean, obviously, you know, it's a bit of a catch-22 because if you see brand new dual lands and brand new power, you're going to be suspicious, because that stuff just doesn't come across. So maybe they should find a way to counterfeit cards and then make them look used, and it would be a little more believable.
Yeah, they should ugly that shit up a little bit. I mean, I'm like mixed on counterfeiting. Like, there's enough artists / punk rock / anarchists in me where I'm like, yeah, fuck the market. We're idiots for spending this much money on cards in the first place. Served us right.
Yeah.
Idiots. Like, let them take advantage of us. That's fine. And then at the same time, I'm like, that's people's money that they worked hard for. That's sad.
Yeah, it's a tough...
So I don't know what my real response is.
It's tough because, you know, I know you're in the camp of wanting Magic cards to be more accessible to everyone. You know, Wizards should just provide them for a fixed price. But then counterfeiting's kind of shitty because people do put a lot of money into this and they shouldn't have to worry about counterfeiters and people showing up with counterfeit cards. So I guess we're not going to solve anything here, but it's just something that I think is worth making sure people are aware of. Kind of public service announcement of the week. Always make sure whenever you get valuable cards like power, dual lands, that you do test them. You can go online, you can Google Magic the Gathering bend test and light test. There's a lot of good videos out there so that you can know what you're looking for to make sure you're not buying counterfeit cards. That's all I really wanted to talk about on the money
topic. There was
topic.
Something else I had to say about the prices of cards. But I lost it, man. There's something I had to pass. Maybe next week I'll remember.
All right. What about either of the Culpits brothers? How do you guys feel about the price of Magic cards?
When I hear you talk about it, it makes me think I will never, ever play Magic. Like, and not because it doesn't sound interesting, but because you're talking, what I hear is hundreds of dollars before I have a deck that I can compete with. And I've walked into bars when I got some, you know, interest in something like Street Fighter or something, and been just like outplayed on a game that really just cost me a few drinks to play. But like, to think that like to play some games with some people, I would need to spend a lot of money, you know, in order to win. Because Street Fighter, I don't have to buy anything except the game, and it was, I don't know. So that's what I think. That it makes me feel like I don't want to play it.
Yeah,
even though it sounds like an interesting game.
It's really incredible it's really incredible the price difference between just wanting to play Magic and wanting to play Magic competitively.
Huge difference.
Because, you know, if you want to, you know, I think Matt Culpits mentioned earlier, he thought about getting some starter decks or some dual decks or something and just kind of jumping in and learning magic, and you can do that for like $30. You can get a dual deck set, and you and your friend can learn how to play magic, and you can play magic, and you can have a great time doing it. But if you want to make the jump to competitive magic, you're going from spending like $30 a month to spending hundreds of dollars to put decks together in formats that change almost every 3 months.
Get the legacy itch, that's thousands of dollars. If you ever want to play vintage, it's tens of thousands of dollars, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of fucking money.
And I mean, you can certainly play there are certainly formats you can play on a budget. But their questionable competitiveness.
Yeah, I think you gotta do some real, like, I don't know, some compassionate searching inside your heart to think that it's, like, that Pauper is more interesting to play than Legacy
right.
or something. Like, it's just, like, it's not the same. Like, playing with powerful cards is super fun. Powerful cards cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I remembered the thing about the unbannings and bannings and cards coming out and costing a lot of money and all of that bothers me. I when they unbanned Bitter Blossom, I bought Bitter Blossoms for not crazy amounts, but a little bit, just because I felt the pressure, like, what if I want to play a fucking Bitter Blossom deck?
Right.
I better get a Bitter Blossom before they're, like, super expensive. Like, what if I want to play in the next tournament? Or
right.
things like that. Like, and I think... that's some anxiety. I mean, it's stuff I need to work on personally in terms of, like, how I handle stress and anxiety and, you know, like, the competitive edge that I have and things like that. But it's so much pressure to, like, stay competitive, stay, you know, keep your head above water when it comes to having the deck that is the best deck. And when things get unbanned or when a card is obviously the most powerful in whatever format you're playing in, there is this, like, drive to acquire those cards. And sometimes you think, like when a new set comes out, I used to buy four of whatever cards I thought would be the ones that I'd play in the hopes that I was getting them before they were worth, you know, triple or quadruple what they originally were priced at. And so I'm spending tons of money on cards speculating, thinking that I'm going to use them in standard. And then, you know, like, sometimes I won, sometimes I didn't win, but I was not having fun spending all this money and stressing out about this stuff. It basically is why I don't play standard anymore, because it just isn't worth it. Like, I don't have the amount of fun I was having versus the amount of anxiety and stress I was experiencing trying to maintain, like, a competitive edge. It wasn't balanced at all, so I was just like, fuck it, this is stupid.
Yeah, I could definitely empathize with where you're coming with. Robbie, were you going to say something?
I was going to mention, because my only experience of these card games is playing Hearthstone. And I know playing that game that no matter how much of a talented player you were at a disadvantage if you didn't have these legendary cards like Ragnaros, or et cetera, et cetera. I haven't played it in a few weeks. And once I started to get a few of those things that could be that slot in the deck that... like, you could have all legendaries or you want that, but it's something that just makes you a competitive player, then all of a sudden, like, oh, okay, I can win now. And in that game, there's a system whereby over a long period of time, if you don't have a lot of money, you can at least purchase it with, like, this disenchant stuff. Now, I know that's an online game, but I just mean, I know in a game like that a starter deck is only going to work for, like, the tiniest little bit, and you're gonna see your disadvantage the first time you show up anywhere where people have those other cards, you know?
Totally.
Yeah, Hearthstone's a good example.
Totally.
Since it has a free-to-play model, and you're basically... so long as you're playing against other people who have similar power level decks, you can win on skill, but once you start playing against people... Look, there's a lot of random number generation in Hearthstone, so there's always... I've seen people with basic card decks, so all free cards, manage to win against decks loaded with legendaries, but certainly much rarer than the similar happening in Magic.
This is the best level to play on.
It is. So I think there's definitely an economic barrier to playing Magic, which is unfortunate, and hopefully, I don't know, you know, it certainly isn't Wizards' job to make the game cheaper, because as Dave pointed out, that secondary market is what keeps the stores afloat, but it is certainly important to make the game accessible to a wider audience, so...
I've had the thought before where I was like, man, I wish I was just more into video games, because that's like $60 one time, you know? And Magic is never $60 one time, ever, you know? And it's like, when you, like, I bought Destiny for $60, I bought the double expansion pack set, which is $30 or $20 or whatever total.
Yeah.
And I've played this more hours than I've played Magic in the last 4 months. And I've had more fun playing it, you know, like, I've really enjoyed playing with you guys, and the amount of economic impact is, like, totally negligible compared to the amount of fun and the amount of time I've spent playing it. And Magic never, ever, ever in my life has ever felt that way.
One thing that I've never understood about Modo, other than the fact that the programming is terrible, is why Wizards is so insistent on maintaining a real-life economy and structure to Modo. For example, the sets are only available when the sets are available in real life, and it is a life that is that the availability is constricted by the printing process. But online, that doesn't exist. There is no printing process. It's just an on-off switch on the admin panel. And so I don't understand why they adhere to that kind of real-life restriction when that restriction does not need to exist at all. Same thing with, like, 8-man queues for a draft, like, or mainly for a constructed event, a draft is totally different. Like, it's just they adhere to this real-life model where the cards have to look like they do in paper, they have to have a similar economy to the paper economy, etc., etc., and they just refuse to do anything that makes sense in a digital.
I mean, I honestly don't think they understand, and I think that's the point. You know, like, I don't think they have any clue about the things you just talked about.
Well, it's
Hearthstone is a good example, so they might learn a few things. You never know.
I don't even know if they would be, like, how much attention are they even paying to Hearthstone? I feel like the guys who run Wizards, the Modo part of Wizards, just have blinders on.
Heavy ammo.
Just total
available.
Blinders on, and they're totally. You know, like,
I don't know. Software development takes a long time, and so it's entirely possible that they are working on it, and it just takes a while for that version to reach everyone.
Dave, I was told that computers are instantaneous and they solve all of our problems.
Well, they were also supporting two different versions of the client for years, so hopefully now that they're only supporting one, it'll go a little faster. But anyway, Modo sucks. Moving on.
Yeah, Modo. So we could certainly one day dedicate an entire podcast to how much Modo sucks.
Nobody wants to hear that.
But no, yeah,
to be
exactly.
fair, I had a really good time drafting on Modo today with Kadar, even though we lost real badly. And when I drafted by myself, I had a really good time on Modo. But that's, in my experience in the last, like, year, that is a rarity where nothing went wrong. I didn't get dropped. You know, shit like that.
Yeah, it has its moments. That's for sure. Let's move on because this is a depressing topic. So let's move on to a happy, fun topic. I don't know, Matt, if you had a chance to read the story we talked a little bit about earlier today, about Alesha, who smiles at death. For those of you who weren't able to read it, I highly recommend you check out last week's Uncharted Realms, which is Wizards' canon story time article every week. This week was about the Mardu Khan from Fate Reforged and how she got her name, who smiles at death. I won't spoil that part for anyone who does plan on reading the story. But what I will spoil is a little thing that Wizards revealed, which is that Alesha identifies as a woman, but was born as a man, making her Wizards' first transgender character.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And she's a major character in the story. I know for those of you listening who read hipstersofthecoast.com, I highly recommend article coming out, or by the time you listen to this, came out on Tuesday, about this topic by Jess, one of our authors. But it's overall, I think this is a good thing, and I think it's gone over pretty well. Dave, do you have a chance to read the story?
Yeah, you know, I actually usually don't like Uncharted Realms. Reading is one of my favorite activities in the world, and I guess I'm a bit of a snob in the kind of stories that I like to read. But Uncharted
also in
Realms
most
just,
things.
Yes, thanks.
On the way.
Uncharted Realms just fails in both the plot department, like the subject department, and the writing style department. Like it's just so inconsistent and not well written that I usually don't read them. But this was one exception in this because there was so much hype around it. But it was really well written. It was concise, which is very nice when it's a story that you're not super sure that you're going to be very interested in. Great, but it was also just generally a well-written story and very affecting. Like I'm not much of a tearjerker kind of guy, but definitely welled up a little bit there at the end.
Yeah,
not because it was sad, just like it was just very, very uplifting and very, I don't know, made me feel something, which is very unusual for magic writing. So,
Dave, I'd always assume that the people who made you out of spare parts even gave you tear ducts. That's interesting.
Yeah. What impresses me the most is, like, oftentimes when diversity gets a bad name, it's because of just blatant and ill-fitting attempts at diversity. But what really impressed me about this story is, one, that it was a good story, but two, the trans part of the character and that experience wasn't like it fit very well in the story they were telling, and it fit in the world, it fit in the plot, it fit with the character and the writing style. You know, it just didn't stick out like a sore thumb like some attempts at forced diversity is. So it was I don't know, it was really well done, and the subtleness and the execution is something that I was very impressed by.
Yeah, I definitely got the impression that they put a little more effort into this one. With respect to the quality of Uncharted Realms. It's certainly hit or miss sometimes, but I feel that with the subject matter they were going to be presenting, that they felt it was important to make sure the story was enjoyable and well done, and really painted Alesha in a positive way. A lot of people have been asking for, and I really hope that they do eventually come out with an origin story, so to say, of how Alesha came to become who she is in the story we've just read, because I think it's important. It's important to get a lot of different kinds of stories, but yeah, it definitely felt unforced. It reminded me a lot of a movie that came out last year called Obvious Child, which was about a comedian, that's with a E-N-N-E at the end, and she gets knocked up on like the first date with some guy, and the movie involves her getting an abortion, but it's kind of just peripheral to the rest of her story, which is about trying to get her life together, trying to deal with her job, losing her job, and her parents are divorced, and things are kind of a mess, and it's just kind of like a romantic comedy kind of story, but on the side, there's this plot where she's, you know, getting an abortion, and it's not forced, it's not like a thing where they talk about how she feels about it. It's not a thing where they talk about the politics behind it. It's just kind of a thing that happens.
They're not explaining it and beating it to death. It's like just part of the story.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, it's refreshing because there's a, you know, while there's a lot of value and there are fantastic stories out there about what it's like to manage with those challenges and to deal with those situations, and people far more qualified than the folks who write Uncharted Realms have written those stories. And everyone ought to read them. But at the same time, it's important culturally for us to be at a point where the people who write Uncharted Realms can write about a trans woman without having to worry that they need to sit there and explain what a trans woman is and what it's like to be a trans woman. Hopefully Wizards helps, you know, the rest of the community kind of find that material if they are interested in it. But it's nice that we can start getting to a point where they can write about it without having to worry about those things.
I think it's often when it's written about, it seems to be that it's filled with excuses and apologies too. And since there were no excuses and there were no apologies, it's just like, this is this person's story, and it's like any other story.
Yeah,
and I think that
exactly.
Makes it all much more accessible and real and meaningful at the end of the day.
What this story reminds me of is our discussion about story and magic a couple weeks ago.
Right. Right.
And it just shows how much more interesting Wizards' minor characters are than their flag-bearing wizard characters are. Like, can you imagine something like this being true for one of the Planeswalkers? Like, you can't, because the Planeswalkers are so bland. Like, they don't use them in that way. Instead, like I talked about a couple weeks ago, like, character is about context, and like, these Planeswalkers never have any context, and they're never allowed to have any context. But Alesha has, or Alesha, I guess we could argue about how to pronounce it, Rich.
It's Mark Rosewater and Doug Beyer both confirmed on Tumblr that it's
Alesha. I don't think those guys actually know anything about Alesha's experience.
I think we need to update Dave's software.
I think so too. I don't remember making him this argumentative.
Anyway, like, they do a much better job of storytelling through these minor characters, and that's really too bad, because like, these are the characters, like, we'll probably never see Alesha again.
Unless
she becomes a Planeswalker.
I was complaining about that very thing to my fiance the other night, and she said that that's why they have fan fiction for things.
Yeah.
So, when is Hipsters going to get a good fan fiction writer?
Awesome. That is a serious concern. I'm gonna tell my fiance we need one. She's sitting over here. We need a quality fan fiction author for the Magic community.
All right, we'll get started. Heavy ammo
available. I will get started on that. I will add it to my list of things to do.
Are you going to become that author, Rich?
I might. Maybe I will.
Yeah, you don't have enough to do, Rich. You don't have any good ideas about, like, 90 different articles simultaneously.
Yeah, what I really should do is drop everything and start writing fan fiction.
Just give it all up for fan fiction. But I have something to say about the... I feel like if they explain her full story and, like, belabor her, like, her origin story. First off, I think origin stories are always really disappointing. You talked to me a little bit about this when we were at the Met today, that it's nice that it's still, you know, it's, like, specific and clear, but there's still a little bit of an opening for us to, like, feel and think into it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really, really nice. And the thing is, if they make it however they end up making it, it's going to be... It's not going to be what everybody wants. It's not going to be what I project in my mind. And it's going to, you know, it has to disappoint. That's so boring. When things are all filled out and explained to you, it's almost always disappointing as far as storytelling. I really like that they basically did it perfectly.
I think so. And I mean, I'd love to see more Alesha stories. But you're right. I think it's very important that they leave things open. You know, and the Destiny story is incredibly open-ended.
And no one likes it but me.
I think, you know, fans tend to want to know facts, right? And when you look at some of the questions that people ask of Mark Rosewater and of Doug Beyer and of the creative folks in general, they're generally interested in the facts, right? They're not so interested in tell me another story about a specific thing. So hopefully we'll get more and more facts out of the creative team, and fans can continue to try to build off of that.
We're being crushed by a 4-person team and we're a 6-person team.
That's because we're talking about magic too much.
Well, that sometimes is to the smaller team's advantage. If they stick
because there's so many more of us floating around.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're all terrible.
Depends on how good the team is. But this map is definitely big enough that a 4-person team that sticks together can pick off the
Jesus.
Two stragglers just consistently and destroy them.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, they're free doing it. We're totally straggling.
All right, I guess we should kind of get our shit together and try to win this match. So,
what other topics do we have on the docket?
Preview. We can talk about the Pro Tour. That's upcoming. As exciting as that is.
Yeah. I'm actually not that excited about it. I was supposed to go. At some point, I was talking to people about going and covering it for Hipsters.
Oh, yeah?
Getting a media pass and everything, and I was just like, is it even worth my time to go? I could just read about it and whine about it in a blog later.
I thought about going to cover it for Hipsters as well, but I'm going to visit my niece for the first time ever in Virginia.
Nice.
She's a month old. So that would be exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited. Matt, you got someone incoming.
5 minutes remaining.
Never mind. Matt Jones. Yeah, so I'm not going to be around for the Pro Tour at all. I might catch the end of Top 8 coverage.
Well, I'm going to try to get a draft going on Saturday at the studio with Kidar.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's modern.
Watch it.
Modern's always exciting, but you know, it's. I'm excited to see what happens with the banned and restricted changes, but I'm also not.
I'm like excited, and then it's to what end? Like, there's so little support for modern now that the PTQs are all shitty. Like, I
right.
don't even know what. Like, what would I make a modern deck for? I mean, the format's exciting, but. I'm not going
right.
to invest
yeah.
time and energy into a format that I don't get to play very often.
PPPQs are more or less all standard.
Yep. So it's going to be cool to see what a birthing podless modern meta is and what the pros come up with, but it's not like I'm going to run out and buy Sam Black's poison deck. You know, the day after, like I did when he did really well at that one Pro Tour, because I don't have a tournament to go into. Like, I'm not going to go to some, you know, start at 7, end at 11:30 tournament on a weeknight just to, like, grind, what, like, Planeswalker points?
Yeah.
There's no point.
No, it's very true. It certainly just isn't as exciting a Pro Tour. I think if it was standard, it would be a little more exciting because it's a kind of a brand new standard environment.
Yeah, I'm actually more excited about seeing what draft decks, and this is insane because I'm not really a limited guy, but I want to see what the hell they put together and some ideas that they have for drafting that I've not been paying attention to. Because Team Draft League is the main way that I play Magic now, and I think that's the kind of knowledge and experience that I want to get out of pros is the drafting.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we talked about at the top of the... at the top of the podcast, whether or not the drafters end up going in two colors more, if they are able to kind of figure out the correct valuation for things, we'll see what they end up doing. I'd really like to come back and win this one, but I don't think it's going to happen.
We're doing really well for being in last place, or for doing so shittily. Yeah. Like, they should have won 20 minutes ago, and they haven't.
Your life was not enough. Well, there it is. No.
Speak of the devil.
All right, and on that note, I think we can call this an end, and we can stop streaming this garbage performance. We started off so well, too.
I got the bounty, so I'm all good on that. Me too.
So, all right, so that's it for us for this week. Next week we may or may not have a podcast for you, depending on what we do for the Pro Tour. But stay tuned. How do I stop streaming?
Hey Guardians, thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers Podcast, where we discuss Magic the Gathering while playing Destiny. You can find more at doomtravelers.com or visit hipstersofthecoast.com for additional Magic content. Thanks to the Brothers Colpitz for joining us in the Crucible this week, and good luck to all of our friends at Pro Tour Fate Reforged this weekend. For my co-hosts Rich Stein and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time. Nothing past William Howard.